Hey there, Super Sober Heroes. It's your host, Sober Steve, the podcast guy. And before we jump into today's episode, I want to take a brief moment to ask for your help to shape the future of gay A. Over the years, this podcast has grown and evolved as I've grown in my sobriety. And recently, I've been investing wild amounts of time, money, and energy to find ways to level up this podcast so it can get heard by the people who need to hear it. I want to take a brief moment to check in with all of you, though, to see what you love about the current show and what could be better as I'm growing and moving forward. In the show notes is a 3 to 5 minute survey for you to complete. I kindly ask that you pause this episode and take the time to complete it if you haven't already. You are kind enough to give me 20 to 40 minutes of your time each week when you listen to these episodes, and I want to make sure it's time well spent. So please let your voice be heard. Thanks, SoberPod, and enjoy the show. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Gay A, a podcast about sobriety for the LGBT plus community and our allies. I'm your host, Steve Bennett Martin. I am an alcoholic, and I'm grateful for how well my Thanksgiving gratitude episode turned out. As of this recording, I am 535 days sober, and today we're welcoming a guest to share their experience, wisdom, and hope with you. Welcome, Mario.
Hello, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. Now, I had the pleasure of getting to meet you over this past year's GSM conference, but why don't you introduce yourself to everyone who might not already know you?
Sure. My name is Mario, and I hail from Houston, Texas, vintage 1962, if that's important to anybody. And I have, at this point, what did they say? 6,241 days sober. 6,241 days, which are just, wow, that number amazes me.
Yeah, that's an impressive number. And before we jump into the thick of it, what are some of the favorite hobbies you found in sobriety?
Mostly relaxing with reading or watching Netflix as much as I can. And it's funny because I try to watch series shows, and then by the third episode, I'm like, okay, I'm not done. So I'm constantly searching for something new to watch. But my favorite genres are anime, anything animated, superhero related, or science fiction. So I try to keep up with some of that.
Yeah, and what, watching anything good lately?
I actually did. Last night, I got a chance to watch Don't Look Up.
Oh, that was very funny.
It was funny and thought-provoking, mm-hmm. and also kind of sad, too.
Yeah, certainly. It ended the way one might think it might, but at the same time, it was still sad.
It was still sad, yes.
Yes. Excellent. Well, tell us a little bit about what your journey with alcohol and addiction was like.
I know, like many of us, I started pretty early in my high school age. I was right around 1979. I graduated in 1980. I definitely was by then smoking pot and drinking. And I joined the Navy, ended up in California for a while, which it could only be drinking because of the drug thing and everything at that time, the prohibitions against drug use. But once I was out of the service, it remained steady until about the 90s when I was introduced to a little substance called crystal meth. And just to qualify or clarify, even before the crystal meth, if you had it, I would use it. You know, so whatever you had, I was going to use, because I was going to try everything, right? I was going to try everything. But that particular drug really set something off in me, and it was off to the races at that point. And by 2003, I definitely was in a tailspin. I was hovering between making rent and being evicted and trying to feed myself and three cats at the time. My partner at the time, Alan, overdosed from crystal meth at the time. And that was an experience to go through. But I still didn't stop. I didn't call it quits until October of 2005.
Okay. And what prompted you to get sober?
My moment of clarity, as we like to call it, or some of us like to call it. I used to have a habit of getting high, watching myself in the mirror, getting high, watch my little eyeballs, dilate and stuff. I thought it was kind of neat. And the only way I can describe it is that I felt the pull of my ancestors. It was almost as if I heard them in the room with me that, they didn't do everything they did for me to do this as I was living my life. I come from a very strong female-dominated family. We are my generation of cousins and everything. We're all first-generation Americans. And a lot of them, we know our family history pretty well. And a lot of the women in my family, they were everything from midwives to they owned stores to they pulled their family through the Depression and stuff. And it was literally like I felt them tap me on the shoulder and say, "You need to stop. You need to stop. This is not what we sacrificed, everything we sacrificed for you to be doing this." And I listened. I listened to that. I listened to that inner voice that said, "Mm-mm, this is it. I'm done."
Yeah, that sounds very inspiring. And how has your life changed since getting sober then?
A lot. A lot. I had always wanted to get into nursing, and I actually did at 18 have a scholarship at the time for a local college. And I frittered away because I was too busy chasing boys and beer at the time. We could drink at 18 at the time in Texas. And so I was too busy chasing boys and beer, and I was unfocused. And I came back to Houston, started my sober journey in 2005. And by 2007, I was like, I got to do something with my life. I just got to do something. Why not go back to medical career? And mind you, I have done just about everything imaginable except jump out of a cake to make a living in my life. I have cleaned houses. I have cooked. I have managed restaurants. I have run a computer system. I have trained people to use computers. I've done sales and hospitality. I've done marketing. I did legal work. I've done administrative work. I mean, I've done just about everything. I was like, well, let me just try this venture. My local community college had a program of nursing, an associate's program, and I started with zero college credits to my name. And I did it. In 2013, I graduated my associate's in nursing, top honors. And I was surprised that one, because I was 51 at the time. And I was one of the oldest people in my class. It was not the oldest one, but I was one of the older people in my class. And that I did so well, you know, and that I managed to stay focused in sobriety. And in that journey, in that time frame, I had a boyfriend, and we broke up in 2011 because of his relapse. And that was not something I wanted to even add to the layer cake. And, you know, securing a job, I had a really supportive boss. I was managing a hair salon at the time. No hair. I don't do hair, but I was managing the stuff, the appointments and the product and all that stuff. I was a lot of support from my family at the time. They still support me, but a lot of support from the family at the time and my boss. And it was a wonderful experience. And I did it, but I really had to put some thought to what am I going to do now that I'm like, you know, some 20 years from retirement age, what am I going to do? And I was like, well, nursing's it. Yeah. And as far as career goes, I am now a charge nurse at a small ER in Houston, a very busy ER. In Houston, I've been doing ER work for 5 years and general nursing for the balance of I'm in my 10th year of nursing.
Congratulations. It's inspiring, the gifts of the sobriety.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I could not have done it. And I definitely know, like I mentioned, I was 18 when I tried to do nursing because of everything I've gone through in life. And then the principles and the guiding wisdom I have from the program I work, I'm able to handle some of the stressors of nursing and the ER work and dealing with colleagues and dealing with difficult patients and difficult colleagues and just life in fucking general. I'm able to juggle all that because the principles that were really set down. And I'm glad it wasn't until 2008 that I started that journey. So it was 5, 6, 7, 8. Mm-hmm. I really solidified my program and got my feet grounded so that I could take that journey.
That's really cool. And how do you feel your sexuality played a role in your addictions?
Definitely. I know that I drank and drugged because everyone else around me was at the time. I mean, I came out in the late 70s as a kid. And, you know, you want to smoke some pot? Sure. You want to get a blowjob? Sure. That's just how we rolled at the time, you know. And Yeah. The intro card, the social lubricant of being gay at that time and growing up and being young and silly was definitely drugs and alcohol. And certainly sport fucking was part of it. And how many people could you get in the weekend at the bathhouse? You know, and if you had to barter for some drugs at some time with sex, then fine, whatever. That's what it took. I definitely did my share of all of that. So my sexuality definitely plays a part in my addiction, and it plays a big part in my sobriety.
Tell us more about how it's impacted your sobriety.
I'm so lucky. I'm so lucky in Houston. We have a fabulous Lambda Center, our gay and lesbian AA center. And we welcome all folks and allies. And of all things, one of my sisters is Jehovah's Witness, but she was very, very kind and loving. And she did research, and she had a packet of information for me when I came to Houston. And one of those resources was Lambda Center. Full disclosure, I'm about to open another closet door here. One of the group meetings that they have there on the regular is a positive sobriety meeting for people with HIV and their supporters. And I was like, I got to go to this meeting. If anything, I've got to make that meeting at this place. And Lambda Center became my home base for sobriety and recovery. I am surrounded by a vast community of loving, wonderful people. And I've learned to give and give back to the center in many, many, many levels in different ways. A little, what do they call these things? Soapbox. Soapbox. My first sponsor, he was my sponsor for 15 years, and we're deep, deep close friends. We've gone past being sponsee, but he's in his 80s, in his late 80s. And I have taken it upon myself. We discussed this and everything, but I'm now his medical POA. I do a lot of his appointments and everything. And it saddens me that not as many younger folks in sobriety step up to the plate for some of the older folks in sobriety, which is something that was modeled to me in my family of origin. You know, you take care of your elders. And so, like I said, it's a little bit of a soapbox for me that, you know, gosh darn it, if they're 80 and they don't drive anymore, go pick them up. Mm-hmm. Take them to a meeting. Take them for coffee. They need that as much as you do to have that service work. And so it's something I've learned to do at Lambda Center. And I've been very involved with their upcoming roundup. I've done several of their skits and sobriety shows that they do. I always wanted to be a star. So yeah, I've been very involved with the Lambda Center at that level and helped out with several of the entertaining things they do, from drag shows to pictures and things like that, and certainly the roundup play too.
Yeah, that's fabulous. And that's definitely some excellent advice for our younger listeners as well. And what are some other practices you use in your daily life to help keep you sober?
There's an excellent, at the same center, a 6:30 in the morning meeting that happens Monday through Friday. They call it Eyes Wide Shut. And man, there's some good sobriety in those rooms. There's some good sobriety in those meetings. And when I can, I make myself go to that meeting. I find that I really work best, especially during my downtimes from nursing, to have that focus in the morning and some time to organize my thoughts. You know, page 86, 87, and 89 were very, and 88, 89 were very important to me in my early sobriety, so that upon awakening, we turn our thoughts to our creator and ask for guidance, blah, blah, blah. And I find the meeting does that for me. I find the meeting gets me set up on the right path. I have a chance to listen to what's going on inside, to listen to what's going on outside, and get some good direction, good orderly direction, as they call it.
Yeah, I can imagine. I wish I was more of a morning person, but I learned to sleep quite well in my sobriety, much better than I did before. So I'm just enjoying that part for now.
Oh, baby cakes, I could too. I could too.
And what's one piece of advice you often find yourself giving newcomers or people who are curious about sobriety?
Give it a chance. Mm-hmm. Give it a chance. You know, and I've been honest about this. In recent months, when I first came in 2005, I honestly thought I'd get, you know, 5-6 years of either abstinence or learning how to handle my drugs better and shit like that. And that it'd be okay. It'd be, and then as I stayed in and did my routine of meetings and things like that and worked with others, I really saw that it's true. There is no going back. If I'm truly an addict alcoholic, there is no going back. There is no, well, just for the weekend. There is no this time only, this friend's celebration. My 60th birthday was just this last year, this last March. There's no picking up for me. And I can only speak for myself. So I know that to be true because I've seen it. I have seen other people live that experiment one more time. And I have lost several really good people in my 17-year journey here.
Yeah, that's excellent. I know a listener reached out when they were in the very early days and they were like, how haven't you relapsed yet? And I was like, it's listening to the stories like of people like who share their experience about what that was like. And I was like, I don't want that for myself. I want to stay sober.
And to be sure, I know for myself, before I came in and did it, and I'm not a one-chip wonder because I didn't even pick up a desire chip. I didn't know what that was. I didn't figure what that was until like my second or third week. I was like, oh, that's what that was. So I didn't pick up a desire chip, to be honest. But even pre-sober days, There were many, many attempts at, like the some of the literature describes as, you know, only this, not that, only during these times, never during a holiday, only during a holiday, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I tried all the different ways. I mentioned one person that died. I've also lost another lover in 89 to H up to AIDS. And we had been together 6 years. And for both, when both partners in their respective timeframes died, I stopped for 30 days. I was going to be a good widow, and I stopped for 30 days, right? Mm-hmm. And I was just, I couldn't wait till day 31. Mm-hmm. I could not wait. You know, so I did my relapsing before I came in the rooms. To be true and honest in my journey, I did my relapsing before I came in the rooms because I thought I could do it. And definitely I needed the help of the collective wisdom of AA and CMA. That is my primary fellowship, Crystal Meth Anonymous. I needed that collective wisdom to get me through those early times and go, you know what? This definitely is not an experiment any longer. I definitely have to live the real lab today.
Yeah, I can relate. And what's been your favorite mantra or quote to try and live by?
Oof, oh, there's so many. Of course, there is a solution. Mm-hmm. That whole page, is it 25? Because I'm not I don't memorize pages that way. But and it's for myself. It's got a really interesting connection. One of my first private duty nursing, as I was getting ready for the boards, I answered an ad for a family looking for a weekend coverage for a child with disabilities, and he didn't understand a word I said. Right? You know, his mentality was just enough that we could watch cartoons together. And I enjoyed it too. I mean, because I love cartoons, right? But there were times we would be doing his little exercise bike around the neighborhood, and I would be repeating out loud, there is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for successful consummation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I memorized that passage. And, you know, if it put to the test, I could probably do it still. But that has become my mantra.
I love that.
The solution. You know, because it's like that, if you really, truly, if you remember the book, grok through that passage, A Stranger in a Strange Land, if you grok through that whole, just really absorb what that three paragraph page is saying, you know, that it doesn't matter what's going on in my life. There is something that will work. It may not always be the one thing I want it to work. Mm-hmm. There is a solution. I just have to be humble enough to be open for it. Yeah, that's my favorite mantra, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely a good one. And we're going to get more in our next episode into your work with GSM. But in the meantime, how can our listeners find you if they want to reach out?
I am on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Look for Mario A. Marino. I use my middle initial because there's a bunch of us out there, apparently. So I'm in Houston. And since you mentioned GSM, my professional for that organization is chair@gayandsober.org. You can always drop me a line through that, or you can reach out through me at Facebook. I'm part of the Gay and Sober Men's Facebook page. I have my own profile page. So by all means, if you have questions, look me up. It's definitely, the other mantra, the other favorite mantra is, our primary purpose is to stay sober and help the other alcoholic and addict to achieve sobriety.
Yeah.
Those two are truly my mantra. That's what I live by. There is a solution, and my primary purpose from here on out is to help the other alcoholic or addict who suffers.
Yeah, I'll be sure to add them into the show notes. So thank you so much. Stick around because we're going to continue our conversation over on the Patreon page. If you want to hear the rest of this conversation, join our Patreon family today. Head over to the post show on our page to hear more about Mario's experiences in sobriety. And as we hinted at, stay tuned next week for a whole episode where we dive into our work with the GSM conference. If you're interested in sharing your story or getting involved with the show, you can email me at gayapodcast@gmail.com or follow me on Instagram @gayapodcast. And follow this podcast wherever you're listening so you can get new episodes when they come out every Thursday. Until that time, stay sober, friends.
Thank you.